Careful. Call your friend back. We'll see to his information tomorrow when Adam has enough control to be on his own.
No, said Adam.
Damned if I will. It felt odd not to be arguing with Adam. The faster we find Jesse, the better.
I can't be in two places at once, Samuel said, and I won't allow you to go out on your own and talk to who knows what kind of fae.
We need to find Jesse, I said.
My daughter comes first.
Samuel twisted around to look at Adam.
You have a dominant wolf in your pack that you trust? Someone not in line to be pack leader?
Warren, Adam and I said his name in the same instant. Warren was my favorite of Adam's pack, and the only wolf whose company I sought out. I met him shortly after I moved to the Tri-Cities, before I even knew there was a pack in town. I hadn't met a werewolf since I'd left Montana, and I certainly hadn't expected to meet one working the night shift at the local Stop and Rob. He'd given me a wary look, but there were other people in the store, so he accepted my payment without a word. I accepted my change with a nod and a smile. After that, we'd mostly ignored each other, until the night a woman with a fresh shiner came into the store to pay for the gas her husband was pumping. She gave Warren the money, then took a firmer grip on the hand of the boy at her side, and asked Warren if he had a back door she could use. He smiled gently at her and shepherded the two frightened people into a small office I'd never noticed before at the back of the store. He left me to watch the till, and went out and had a short talk with the man at the pump. When he came back, he had $200 cash for her, and her husband drove away with a speed indicating either terror or rage. Warren and I waited with the battered pair until the lady who ran the local women's shelter drove over to collect her newest clients. When they left, I turned to him and finally introduced myself. Warren was one of the good guys, a hero. He was also a lone wolf. It had taken him a while to trust me enough to tell me why. Perhaps in other ages and other places, it wouldn't have mattered that he was gay. But most of the werewolves in power in the U.S. had been born in a time when homosexuality was anathema, even punishable by death in some places. One of my professors once told me that the last official act of the British monarchy was when Queen Victoria refused to sign a law that made same-sex acts illegal. It would have made me think more highly of her, except the reason she objected was because she didn't believe women would do anything like that. Parliament rewrote the law so it was specific to men, and she signed it. A tribute to enlightenment, Queen Victoria was not. Neither, as I have observed before, are werewolf packs. There was no question of Warren staying in the closet either, at least not among other werewolves. As demonstrated by Adam and Samuel just a few hours ago, werewolves are very good at sensing arousal. Not just smells, but elevated temperature and increased heart rate. Arousal in werewolves tends to bring out the fighting instinct in all the nearby males. Needless to say, a male wolf who is attracted to other male wolves gets in a lot of fights. It spoke volumes about Warren's fighting ability that he survived as long as he had. But a pack won't accept a wolf who causes too much trouble. So he'd spent his century of life cut off from his kind. It was I who introduced Adam and Warren, about the time Adam moved in behind me. I'd had Warren to dinner, and we'd been laughing about something, I forget what, and one of Adam's wolves howled. I'll never forget the desolation on Warren's face. I'd heard it all the time when I was growing up. Wolves are meant to run in a pack. I still don't understand it completely myself, but Warren's face taught me that being alone was no trivial thing for a wolf. The next morning, I'd knocked on Adam's front door. He listened to me politely and took the piece of paper with Warren's phone number on it. I'd left his house, knowing I'd failed. It was Warren who told me what happened next. Adam summoned Warren to his house and interrogated him for 2 hours. At the end of it, Adam told Warren he didn't care if a wolf wanted to screw ducks as long as he'd listen to orders. Not actually in those words, if Warren's grin as he told me about it was an accurate measure. Adam uses crudeness as he uses all of his weapons, seldom, but with great effect. I suppose some people might think it odd that Warren is Adam's best friend, though Daryl is higher ranking. But they are heroes, both of them, two peas in a pod. Well, except Adam isn't gay. The rest of the pack weren't all happy when Warren came in. It helped a little that most of Adam's wolves are even younger than he, and the last few decades have seen a vast improvement over the rigid Victorian era.
Then, too, none of the pack wanted to take on Adam, or Warren. Warren didn't care what the rest of the wolves thought, just that he had a pack, a place to belong. If Warren needed friends, he had me, and he had Adam. It was enough for him. Warren would never betray Adam. Without Adam, he would no longer have a pack. "I'll give him a call," I said with relief. He picked up on the second ring.
"Warren here. Is this you, Mercy? Where have you been? Do you know where Adam and Jesse are?"
"Adam was hurt," I said. "The people who did it took Jesse."
"Tell him not to let anyone else know," said Samuel. "Who was that?"
Warren's tone was suddenly cool.
"Samuel," I told him. "Bran's son."
"Is this a coup?" Warren asked. "No," answered Adam from the back seat. "At least not on Bran's part."
"Excuse me," I said, "but this is my phone call. Would you all please pretend that it is a private conversation? That includes you, Warren. Quit listening to the other people in my van."
"All right," agreed Warren.
Having heard Adam, his voice relaxed into its usual lovely South Texas drawl.
"How are you today, Mercy?" he asked sweetly.
But as he continued, his voice became gradually sharper.
"And have you heard the startling news that our Alpha's house was broken into and he and his daughter disappeared? That the only clue was a phone message left on the damned Russian witch's phone? A message that she has refused to let anyone else listen to? Rumor has it that the message is from you, and no one can find you either."
Samuel leaned his head back, closed his eyes, and said,
"Tell him you'll explain when we get there."
I smiled sweetly. "I'm doing better all the time, Warren. Thank you for asking. Montana is nice, but I don't recommend a November vacation unless you ski."
"Haven't put on skis for 20 years, murmured Warren, sounding a little happier. "Has Adam taken up skiing during this jaunt of yours to Montana?"
"He has skis," I said, "but his health wasn't up to it this time. I brought back a doctor, but the two of us found out that we need to go out tonight, and we're wondering if you were up for a little nursing."
"Glad to," said Warren. "I don't work tonight anyway. Did you say Jesse's been kidnapped?"
"Yes, and for right now, we need you to keep it under your hat."
"I drove by your house on the way back from work this morning," Warren said slowly. "There's been a lot of activity there. I think it's just the pack watching, but if you want to avoid them, maybe you all ought to spend the night at my place." "You think it's the pack?" asked Adam.
Warren snorted.
"Who called and talked to me about it? Daryl? Arielle called to tell me you were missing, but without you, the women are mostly left out of the business, too. The rest of the pack is supposed to be keeping their eyes out for you, all three of you, but that's all I know. How long do you need to keep him in the dark?" "For a day or two."
Adam's voice was neutral, but the words would tell Warren all he needed to know.
"Come to my house. I don't think that anyone except you and Mercy even know where I live. I've got enough room for all of you. Unless there are a couple of people who haven't spoken up."
Each of the Tri-Cities has its own flavor, and it is in Richland that the frenzy of the dawn of the nuclear age has pressed most firmly. When the government decided to build weapons-grade plutonium here, they had to build a town, too. So scattered over the city are 26 types of buildings designed to house the workers for the nuclear industry. Each kind of house was given a letter designation beginning with A and ending Z. I don't recognize them all, but the big duplexes, the A and B houses, are pretty distinctive. The A houses look sort of like Eastern farmhouses, two-story, rectangular, and unadorned. B houses are single-story rectangles. Most of them have been changed a little from what they once were. Porches added, converted from duplexes to single-family dwellings, and back again. But no matter how much they are renovated, they all have a sort of sturdy plainness that overcomes brick facades, decks, and cedar siding. Warren lived in half an A duplex, with a big maple tree taking up most of his part of the front lawn. He was waiting on his porch when I drove up. When I'd met him, he'd had a sort of seedy, "I've been there and done everything" kind of look. His current lover had coaxed him into cutting his hair and improving his dress a little. His jeans didn't have holes in them, and his shirt had been ironed sometime in the not-too-distant past. I was able to park directly in front of his home. As soon as I stopped, he hopped down the stairs and opened the van's sliding door. He took in Adam's condition in one swift glance.
"You say this happened night before last?" he asked me.
"Yep. His accent is thick enough that I sometimes found myself falling into it, even though I'd never been to Texas. Warren stuck his thumbs in his pockets and rocked back on the heels of his battered cowboy boots.
"Well, boss," he drawled, "I expect I ought to feel lucky you're alive."
"I'd feel lucky if you could see your way to helping me up," Adam growled. "I wasn't feeling too bad this morning, but this thing's springs leave a lot to be desired."
"We can't all drive a Mercedes," I said lightly, having gotten out myself. "Warren, this is Brand's son, Dr. Samuel Cornick, who has come down to help." Warren and Samuel assessed each other like a pair of cowboys in a 50s movie. Then, in response to some signal invisible to me, Samuel held out a hand and smiled.
"Good to meet you," he said.
Warren didn't say anything, but he shook Samuel's hand once and looked as if he took pleasure in the other man's greeting. To Adam, Warren said,
"I'm afraid it'll be easier to carry you, boss. There's a front stairs, then a flight up to the bedrooms."
Adam frowned unhappily, but nodded.
"All right."
Warren looked a little odd carrying Adam, because while not tall, Adam is wide, and Warren is built more along the lines of a marathon runner. It's a kind of thing werewolves have to be careful not to do too often in public. I opened the door for them, but stayed in the living room while Warren continued up the stairs. Samuel waited with me. Warren's half of the duplex had more square footage than my trailer, but between the small rooms and the stairways, my house always felt bigger to me. He'd furnished the house comfortably with garage sale finds and bookcases filled eclectically with everything from scientific texts to worn paperbacks bearing thrift store price tags on the spines. Samuel settled on the good side of the plush sofa and stretched out his legs. I turned away from him and thumbed through the nearest bookcase. I could feel his gaze on my back, but I didn't know what he was thinking.
"Oh, mercy," sighed a soft voice. "This one is pretty. Why aren't you flirting with him?"
I looked at the kitchen doorway to see Kyle, Warren's current lover, leaning against the doorway of the kitchen in a typical Kyle pose designed to show off the toned body and tailored clothes. The pose was deceptive. Like Kyle's lowered eyelids and pouty Marilyn Monroe expression, it was designed to hide the intelligence that made him the highest-paid divorce attorney in town. He told me once that being openly gay was as good for his business as his reputation as a shark. Women in the middle of a divorce tended to prefer dealing with him even over female lawyers. Samuel stiffened and gave me a hard look. I knew what it meant. He didn't want a human involved in werewolf business. I ignored him. Unfortunately, Kyle didn't. He read the disapproval and mistook its cause. "Good to see you," I said. "This is an old friend visiting from Montana." I didn't want to get too detailed because I thought it was up to Warren how much he told Kyle. "Samuel, this is Kyle Brooks. Kyle, meet Dr. Samuel Cornick." Kyle pushed himself off the doorframe with his shoulders and strolled into the living room. He stopped to kiss me on the cheek, then sat down on the sofa as close to Samuel as he could get. It wasn't that he was interested in Samuel. He'd seen Samuel's disapproval and had decided to exact a little revenge. Warren usually retreated from the frowns of others or ignored them. Kyle was a different kettle of fish entirely. He believed in making the bastard squirm. I'd like to say that he had a chip on his shoulder, but he had no way of knowing that it wasn't his sexual orientation causing Samuel's reaction. Warren hadn't told him he was a werewolf. It was strongly discouraged to discuss the matter with anyone other than permanent mates, and to werewolves that meant male and female pairings, and the punishment for disobedience was harsh. Werewolves don't have jails. The people who break their laws are either punished physically or killed. To my relief, Samuel seemed more amused than offended by Kyle's blatant come-on. When Warren came down the stairs, he paused a little at the sight of Kyle's hand on Samuel's thigh. When he started down again, his movements were easy and relaxed, but I could smell the tension rising in the air. He was not pleased. I couldn't tell if he was jealous or worried for his lover. He didn't know Samuel, but he knew better than most what the reaction of most werewolves would be.
"Kyle, it might be a good idea to take a few days and check out the state of your house."
Warren's tone was even, but his drawl was gone. Kyle had his own house, an expensive place up on one of the hills in West Richland, but he'd moved in with Warren when Warren had refused to move in with him.
At Warren's words, he stilled.
"I'm hiding someone for a few days," Warren explained. "It's not illegal, but it won't be safe here until he's gone."
Samuel might have turned invisible for all the attention Kyle paid him.
"Darling, if you don't want me around, I'm gone. I suppose I'll accept Jordy's invitation for Thanksgiving, shall I?" "It's just for a couple of days," said Warren, his heart in his eyes. "This has something to do with what you've been so upset about the past couple of days?"
Warren glanced at Samuel, then nodded once, quickly. Kyle stared at him for a moment, then nodded back.
"All right, a couple of days. I'll leave my stuff here." "I'll call you." "You do that."
Kyle left, closing the door behind him gently.
"You need to tell him," I urged. "Tell him the whole thing or you're going to lose him."
I liked Kyle, but more than that, a blind person could have seen that Warren really loved him. Warren gave a pained half-laugh.
"If you think he'd be overjoyed to hear that he was sleeping with a monster, do you think that would make everything okay?"
He shrugged and tried to pretend it didn't matter.
"He'll leave me one way or another anyway, Mercy. He graduated from Cornell, and I work nights at a gas station. Hardly a match made in heaven."
"I've never seen that it bothered him," I said. "He bends over backwards to keep you happy. Seems to me that you might give him a little something back."
"It's forbidden," Samuel said,
but he sounded sad.
"He can't tell him."
"What do you think Kyle will do?" I said indignantly. "Tell everyone that Warren's a werewolf? Not Kyle. He didn't get where he is by shooting off his mouth, and he's not the kind of person to betray anyone. He's a lawyer. He's good at keeping secrets. Besides, he's got too much pride to allow himself to be just another tabloid headline."
"It's all right, Mercy."
Warren patted me on my head.
"He hasn't left me yet."
"He will if you have to keep lying to him," I said.
The two werewolves just looked at me. Warren loved Kyle, and he was going to lose him because someone had decided you had to be married before you told your spouse what you were, as if that wasn't a recipe for disaster. I was pretty certain Kyle loved Warren, too. Why else would he live at Warren's when he had a huge, modern, air-conditioned monstrosity with a swimming pool? And Warren was going to throw it all away. "I'm going for a walk," I announced, having had enough of werewolves for one day. "I'll come back when Z calls." I wasn't as civilized as Kyle. I slammed the door behind me and started off down the sidewalk. I was so mad I almost walked right past Kyle, who was just sitting in his Jag, staring straight ahead. Before I could think better of it, I opened the passenger door and slid in. "Take us to Howard Amon Park," I said. Kyle gave me a look, but his lawyer face was on, so I couldn't tell what he thought, though my nose gave me all sorts of information on what he was feeling. Angry, hurt, and discouraged. What I was about to do was dangerous, no question. It wasn't just a werewolf's obligation to obey his alpha that kept Warren's mouth shut. If Kyle did start telling everyone about werewolves, he would be silenced. And, like me or not, if Adam or Bran found out I was the one who told him, they'd silence me, too. Did I know Kyle well enough to trust him with our lives? The Jag slid through the sparse Wednesday-after-work traffic like a tiger through the jungle. Neither Kyle's driving nor his face gave any sign of the anger that had raised his pulse rate or the pain that fueled his anger, but I could smell them. He pulled into Howard Amon near the south end and parked the car in one of the empty spaces. There were a lot of empty parking slots. November is not a time when most people decide to head to a river park.
"It's cold," he said. "We could talk in the car."
"No," I said and got out. He was right. It was chilly. The wind was mild that day, but the Columbia added moisture to the air. I shivered in my cocoa-stained T-shirt, or maybe with nerves. I was going to do this and hope I wasn't wrong about Kyle. He opened the trunk of his car and pulled a light jacket out and put it on. He took out a trench coat, too, and handed it to me.
"Put this on before you turn blue," he said.
I wrapped myself in his coat and in the smell of expensive cologne. We were much of a size, so his coat fit me. "I like it," I told him. "I need to get one of these." He smiled, but his eyes were tired. "Let's walk," I said, and tucked my arm in his, leading him past empty playground equipment and onto the path that ran along the river. Warren was right, I thought. Having Kyle know he was a monster might not help matters between them at all, but I had the feeling that today would be the final straw if someone didn't clue Kyle in. "Do you love Warren?" I asked. "Not the good sex and great company kind of love. I mean the I'll follow you to death and beyond kind." It made me feel better that he paused before he answered.
"My sister Allie is the only one of my family I still talk to. I told her about Warren a few months ago. I hadn't realized, until she mentioned it, that I'd never told her about any of my other lovers."
He put his hand over mine where it rested on his arm, warming it.
"My parents denied what I was for years. When I finally confronted them about it after my mother set me up with yet another young woman with a good pedigree, my father disinherited me. My sister Allie called as soon as she heard. But after that first conversation, we avoid talking about my being gay. When I talk to her, I feel as if I have a scarlet letter sewn on my chest, and we are both trying to pretend it's not there."
He gave a bitter, angry laugh that changed subtly at the end. When he spoke again, his voice was subdued.
"Allie told me to bring him to visit."
He looked at me and shared what that invitation meant to him. We'd set out at a fast pace, and the park had narrowed to a strip of lawn on either side of the path. The riverbank exchanged its well-groomed look for a more natural growth of bushes and winter-yellowed knee-high grass. There was a metal, porch-type swing set on the top of a rise, set to look out over the river. I tugged him to it and sat down. It was so important to get this right. Now that the time had come, I was afraid I'd ruin everything. Swinging lazily, we watched the water flow past us, almost black in the growing shadows of the overcast sky. After a moment, he rubbed his face briskly to warm it, and to wipe away incipient tears.
"God," he said, and I flinched.
I'm not a vampire who can't bear to hear his name, but I don't like it used in vain. When he continued, though, I thought perhaps it hadn't been in vain at all.
"I love him."
It sounded as though the words were ripped from his throat.
"But he won't let me in. People call in the middle of the night, and he leaves without telling me where he's going."
A lone bicyclist, wearing the skin-tight uniform of the die-hard enthusiast, appeared from the way we'd come. He passed us in a blur of spokes and Superman blue lycra.
"Nice legs," said Kyle.
It was an old game, Kyle and I comparing notes on men while Warren pretended exasperation. I leaned my head against Kyle's shoulder. "Too small. I don't like it when I outweigh my men." Kyle leaned back until he was looking at the sky rather than the river.
"When we were in Seattle last month, he drove away a group of drunken redneck gay bashers, just scared them off with a few words. But that Daryl treats him like dirt, and Warren just puts up with it. I don't understand. And this stuff tonight..."
He sucked air in to steel himself.
"Is he involved with drug dealers?"
I shook my head quickly. "No, nothing illegal."
"Not yet, anyway." "Is he a fae, then?"
he asked, as if it wouldn't bother him much.
"The fae all came out years ago." He snorted. "You're not that dumb. I know a few doctors and teachers who are still in the closet about being gay, and all they have to worry about is losing their jobs, not having a group of idiots burn their houses down."
I could feel him deciding Warren was fae, and his agitation dropped appreciably.
"That would explain some things, like how strong he is, and how he knows who's coming before he answers the door."
Well, I thought, feeling hopeful, being fae wasn't quite the same as being a werewolf. But if he could accept the one, maybe the other wouldn't be too big a stretch. "He's not fae," I said. I started to tell him just what Warren was, but the words caught in my throat.
"Warren should be the one telling me this," said Kyle.
"Right," I agreed. "But he can't."
"You mean he won't?"
"No, can't." I shook my head. "I don't have many friends," I said. "Not come over and eat popcorn and watch a stupid movie friends. You and Warren are sort of it." "I don't have many girlfriends. My work isn't conducive to meeting other women."
"Pretty sad,"
Kyle commented.
Then he said, "You and Warren are the only people I eat popcorn with, too."
Pathetic.
The banter helped. I drew in a breath and just said it. Warren's a werewolf.
A what?
Kyle stopped the swing. A werewolf. You know, the moon-called, run-on-4 feet-with-big-fangs kind of werewolf. He looked at me.
You're serious?
I nodded. And you're not going to breathe a word of it.
Oh?
That's why Warren couldn't tell you. That, and because Adam, the Pack Alpha, forbade it. If you go out now and talk to the authorities or the papers, even if they don't believe you, the Pack will kill you. I knew I was speaking too fast, but I couldn't seem to slow down. In Warren's house, with only Samuel and Warren, it hadn't seemed so dangerous. Samuel and Warren might care for me, but there were plenty of werewolves right here in town who would be happy to see me and Kyle dead for what I had just told him. Warren will fight them, and there are too many of them. He'll die, and you'll die with him. Kyle held up a hand.
Hold on. It's a little soon for you to have Warren and me dead, don't you think?
I took a deep breath. I hope so. You have to believe me on this. They take their secrecy very seriously. How do you think they've remained undetected for so long?
Mercy.
He caught my hand. His own felt cold, but that might have been from the wind.
A werewolf?
He didn't really believe me. That might be more dangerous. 20 years ago, no one believed in the Fae, either. Look, I can prove it to you. I looked at a thicket of leafless bushes. They weren't really thick enough for me to strip and shift in, but there weren't any boats out on the water, and as long as we didn't get another biker at the wrong moment, I could just shift in my clothes. I get smaller, not bigger. But I'd rather be given a ticket for indecent exposure. A coyote in human clothes looks ridiculous. Wait here. I gave him the trench coat so it wouldn't get dirty, then hopped off the swing and waded through the old grass into the bushes. I took off my clothes as fast as I could and shifted as soon as I dropped the last piece of clothing. I stopped on the path and sat down, trying to look harmless.
Mercy?
Kyle had his lawyer face on, which told me how shocked he was. He really hadn't believed me. I wagged my tail and made a crooning noise. He got out of the swing like an old, old man and approached me.
A coyote? He asked.
When I went down to get my clothes, he followed me. I shifted right in front of him, then scrambled back into my clothes as I heard another bicycle coming along. I'm not a werewolf, I told him, running my fingers through my hair. But I'm as close as you're going to get until you talk Warren into changing for you. Kyle made an impatient sound and pulled my hands away, rearranging my hair himself. Werewolves are bigger, I said, feeling as though I ought to warn him. A lot bigger. They don't look like wolves. They look like really, really big wolves who might eat you.
Okay, he said, stepping back.
I thought he was talking about my hair until he continued.
Warren's... a werewolf.
I looked at his lawyer face and sighed. He couldn't tell you. If I tell you and you don't do anything stupid, you and he are both safe. But if he told you, no matter how you reacted, he would have disobeyed a direct order. The penalty for that is brutal. He still wasn't giving anything away. He was so closed off. I couldn't sense what he was feeling. Most humans don't have that kind of control over themselves.
Won't his... pack? He stumbled over that word a little. Won't they think he told me?
A lot of werewolves can smell a lie, I said. They'll know how you found out. He went back to the swing, picked up the trench coat, and held it out to me.
Tell me about werewolves.
I was in the middle of trying to explain just how dangerous a werewolf could be and why it wasn't a good idea for him to flirt with Samuel or Daryl when my cell phone rang. It was Z.
Business? Kyle asked when I hung up.
Yes, I bit my lip. He smiled.
It's all right. I think I've heard enough secrets for one day. I take it you need to go back to Warren's?
Don't talk to him yet, I said. Wait for it to sink in. If you have other questions, you can call me.
Thanks, Mercy. He wrapped an arm around my shoulder. But I think I need to talk the rest out with Warren. After his business is finished.
Chapter 9 Samuel and Warren were seated on opposite sides of the living room when I walked in, and the air smelled thick with anger. I couldn't tell just by looking at them whether they were angry with each other or something else, but then werewolves are always ready to be angry about something. I'd forgotten what it was like. Of course, I wasn't the only one with a nose. Warren, sitting closest to the door, took a deep breath.
"She's been with Kyle," he said, his voice flat. "She smells like the cologne I gave him." "You told him."
He swore at me, but there was more pain than anger in it. I felt a sharp twinge of guilt. "You weren't going to tell him," I said. I was not apologizing. "And he deserved to know that all the crap he has to put up with is not all you're doing." Warren shook his head and gave me a despairing glance.
"Do you have a death wish? Adam could have you and Kyle executed for it. I've seen it done."
"Just me, not Kyle," I said.
"Yes, damn it, Kyle, too."
"Only if your lover decides to take it to the news or police."
Samuel's voice was mild, but Warren glared at him anyway.
"You risk too much, Mercy," said Warren, turning back to me. "How do you think I'd feel if I lost both of you?"
All the anger left him suddenly, leaving only misery behind.
"Maybe you were right. It was still my job, my risk. If he was going to know, it should have been me telling him." "No, you are pack and sworn to obedience."
Adam swayed at the top of the stairs, leaning a little on his cane. He was wearing a white shirt and jeans that fit.
"If you told him, I'd have had to enforce the law or risk a rebellion in the pack."
He sat down on the top stair more abruptly than he meant to, I think, and grinned at me.
"Samuel and I both can witness that Warren didn't tell Kyle anything. You did, despite Warren's objections, I might add. And, as you keep insisting, you are not pack."
He looked over at Warren.
"I'd have given you permission a long time ago, but I have to obey orders, too."
I stared at him a moment. "You knew I was going to tell Kyle." He smiled.
"Let's just say that I thought I was going to have to come down and order you not to tell him so you would storm out the door before Kyle drove off."
"You manipulative bastard," I said with a tinge of awe. That was it. Three tires were going to come off that old rabbit.
"Thank you."
He gave me a modest smile. "And when we got Jessie back, she could help me with the graffiti."
"How did you take it?" asked Warren.
He'd gotten off the couch and stood staring out his window. His hands hung loose and relaxed by his side, giving nothing of his feelings away. "He's not gone running to the police," I told Adam and Samuel. I searched for something more hopeful to tell Warren, but I didn't want to raise his expectations in case I was wrong about Kyle. "He said he'd talk it over with you," I told him at last, "after this business is finished." He raised his hands to his face abruptly, in a gesture very like the one Kyle had used.
"At least it's not over. Yet."
He wasn't talking to any of us, but I couldn't stand the bleakness of his voice. I touched his shoulder and said, "Don't screw it up anymore, and I think you'll be okay with it." Samuel and I headed out to meet with Z and his informant, and I was still trying to figure out if I should have been mad at Adam for manipulating me like that. Except that he actually hadn't done any manipulation, had he? All he'd done was claim credit for my actions afterward. The light turned red, and I had to stop behind a minivan a little closer than I usually did. Samuel's hand braced itself on my dash, and he sucked in his breath. I made a face at the kid in the back seat of the van who had twisted around in his seatbelt to look at us. He pulled his lower eyelids down and stuck out his tongue.
"It's not that I object to being in a car wreck," Samuel said. "I just prefer to have them on purpose."
"What?" I glanced over at him, then looked in front of us. The back of the other van made an all-encompassing wall about 2 feet from our windshield. Sudden comprehension made me grin. "Vanagons have no nose," I said gently. "Our bumper is about a foot from your toes. You could walk between our cars."
"I could reach out and touch that boy," he said.
The boy had made another face, and Samuel made one back, sticking his thumbs in his ears and spreading his fingers out like moose antlers.
"You know, one of Adam's jobs was to make sure you didn't run around telling the world about werewolves."
The light turned green, and the kid waved sadly as his van accelerated onto the interstate ramp. We were accelerating too, but the ramp curled around in an uphill slant, so it would take us a while to get to interstate speed. I snorted. "Kyle's not the world," I glanced at him. "Besides, you knew what I was going to do as well as Adam did. If you'd really objected, you would have stopped me before I left."
"Maybe I think Kyle is trustworthy,"
I snorted. "Maybe the moon is made of green cheese. You don't care. You think the werewolves need to come out in public like the Fae." Samuel had never been afraid of change.
"We aren't going to be able to hide much longer," Samuel said, confirming my guess. "When I went back to school, I realized just how far forensic medicine has come. 10 years ago, when it was just the military and the FBI labs we had to worry about, having a few wolves in the right places was sufficient. But there aren't enough wolves to infiltrate every small-town police laboratory. Since the Fae came out, the scientists are paying closer attention to abnormalities they used to attribute to lab equipment failures or specimen contamination. If Da doesn't pick his time soon, it'll pick him."
"You're the reason he's considering it at all." That made sense. Bran had always given close consideration to Samuel's advice.
"Da's not stupid. Once he understood what we faced, he came to the same conclusion. He has a meeting scheduled for all the alphas this coming spring."
He paused.
"He considered using Adam, the handsome Vietnam War hero."
"Why not you?" I asked. "The handsome, selfless doctor who has been keeping people alive for centuries."
"That's why Da's in charge and you're just a minion," he said. "Remember, popular culture holds that all you need to become a werewolf is to have one bite you, not unlike AIDS. It will be a while before they're comfortable rubbing elbows up close and personal. Better to leave them thinking that all the wolves are in the military and the police, you know, to serve and protect."
"I'm not a minion," I objected hotly. "Minions have to be followers." He laughed, pleased at having gotten my goat again. "You don't mind that I told Kyle early?" I asked after a while.
"No, you were right. He has too much to lose by going to the tabloids, and he's the kind of people we need behind us to keep the mobs under control."
"Educated, well-spoken, well-bred lawyer?" I tried. "Yes, that all fit Kyle." "But he's not exactly mainstream." Samuel shrugged.
"Being gay has a certain cachet today."
I thought of the story Kyle had told me about his family, and thought Samuel was mistaken, at least in some quarters. But all I said was, "I'll tell Kyle he has a certain cachet with you." Unexpectedly, Samuel grinned.
"I'd rather you didn't. He'll just flirt with me some more."
"Speaking of uncomfortable," I said, "what had you and Warren so uptight?"
"It was mostly Warren," he said. "I'm a stranger, a dominant wolf in his territory, and he was already upset because he thought he was losing the love of his life. If I'd realized how dominant he was, I'd have taken myself elsewhere for the night. We'll manage, but it won't be comfortable."
"He's Adam's third."
"Would have been nice if someone had seen fit to tell me that," Samuel groused good-naturedly. "With Adam wounded and the second not there, that sticks Warren in the alpha role. No wonder he was so wound up. I was ready to go out and take a walk myself when you showed up."
He gave me a sharp look.
"Odd how you showing up let him back down. Just as if Adam's second were there. Or his mate."
"I'm not pack," I said shortly. "I'm not dating Adam. I have no status in the pack. What I did have was a long overdue conversation with Kyle, which is what distracted Warren." Samuel continued to watch me. His mouth was quirked up, but his eyes were full of things I couldn't read as he said,
"Adam staked his claim on you before his pack. Did you know that?"
I hadn't. It made me suck in an angry breath before I realized why he might have done that. "He had to keep his pack from killing me somehow. Wolves kill coyotes who are in their territory. A formal claim of me as his mate would keep me safe. I understand that was something Bran asked him to do. It doesn't make me pack. It doesn't make me his mate. The first is out because I'm a coyote. The second, because somebody has to ask me before he can claim me for a mate." Samuel laughed, but there was no amusement in it.
"You can think as you please. How much time do we have before we find this bar?"
"It's in the far side of Pasco," I said. "We'll be there in 10 minutes.
"Well," he said,
Why don't you tell me about Z and this Fae we are supposed to meet?
I don't know a lot, I told him. Not about the Fae. Just that she's got some information we might be interested in. As for Z, he's a gremlin. He gave me my first job out of college, and I bought the garage from him when he retired. He still helps out when I need him, or when he gets bored. He likes to take things apart and see what's wrong with them, but he usually lets me put them back together again.
There's a Fae reservation near here.
I nodded. About 40 miles away, just outside of Walla Walla.
Adam says that having so many lesser Fae around has attracted more of the greater Fae.
I don't know about that, I said. I can smell their magic, but I can't tell how strong they are.
He thinks that's also why there are more vampires, ghosts, and whatnot around the Tri-Cities than, say, Spokane, which is a larger city.
I try to stay out of the other species' business, I told him. I can't avoid the werewolves, not with Adam living right next door, but I try. The only Fae I associate with are Z and his son Tad.
The Fae are willing to talk to you.
Samuel stretched his legs out and clasped his hands behind his neck, sticking his elbows out like wings.
Adam says your old boss is one of the oldest of the Fae. And just so you know, the metalsmiths, gremlins, are not included with the lesser Fae. Also, Warren told me that Stefan the vampire visits you quite often. Then there's this human police officer. Drawing the attention of the police is dangerous.
It did sound as if I had my finger in all sorts of pies. Z was forced public by the Grey Lords, I said, so someone considers him to be one of the lesser Fae. Stefan loves his bus, and I let him help me fix it.
You what?
I forgot he'd never met Stefan. He's not like most vampires, I tried to explain. Even though Stefan was the only vampire I'd ever met, I knew how they were supposed to act. I went to movies just like everyone else.
They are all like most vampires, Samuel said darkly. Some of them are just better at hiding it than others.
It wouldn't do any good to argue with him, especially since I agreed with him in principle. And the police officer wasn't my fault, I muttered, taking my exit into Pasco. It seemed like a good time to change the subject, so I said, The Fairy Mound in Walla Walla is the bar where tourists go to see the Fae. The Fae who don't want to be gawked at mostly hang out at Uncle Mike's here in Pasco. Z says there's a spell on it that makes humans avoid it. It doesn't affect me, but I don't know about werewolves.
You aren't going in without me, he said.
Fine. Never argue with werewolves before you need to, I reminded myself. Uncle Mike's was across the Columbia River from my garage, which put it near Pasco's industrial park. The old building had once been a small warehouse, and there were warehouses on either side, both heavily tagged by the local kids. I wasn't sure if magic kept the kids away or someone with a lot of paint and a brush, but Uncle Mike's exterior was always pristine. I pulled into the parking lot and turned off my lights. It was about 7, still a little early for the regular crowd, and there were only 4 other cars in the lot, one of which was Z's truck. Inside, the bar was dark enough that a human might stumble over the stairs that led from the entry to the bar proper. Samuel hesitated in the doorway, but I thought that was a tactical thing and not a reaction to a spell. The bar took up all of the wall to our right. There was a small dance floor cleared in the center of the room with clusters of small tables scattered around the outside. There they are, I told Samuel, and headed for the far corner, where Z sat looking relaxed next to a moderately attractive woman in conservative business dress. I'd never seen Z without his glamour. He told me he'd worn it so long that he was more comfortable in human guise. His chosen form was moderately tall, balding, with a little pot belly. His face was craggy, but not unattractively so, just enough to give it character. He saw us coming and smiled. Since he and the woman already had the defensive seats, setting their backs against the wall, Samuel and I sat across from them. If having the rest of the room behind him, mostly empty as it was, bothered Samuel, I couldn't tell. I hitched my chair around until I could at least get a glimpse of the rest of the room. "Hey, Z," I said. "This is Dr. Samuel Cornick. Samuel, meet Z." Z nodded, but didn't try to introduce his companion. Instead, he turned to her and said,
These are the ones I told you about.
She frowned and tapped the table with long, manicured nails. Something about the way she used them made me think that beneath the glamour, she might have claws. I'd been trying to pin down her scent, but was finally forced to conclude that either she didn't have one, or that she smelled of iron and earth, just like Z. When she looked up from contemplating her nails, she spoke to me and not to Samuel.
Z tells me there's a child missing.
She's 15, I said, wanting to be clear. The Fae don't like it if they think you've lied to them. The local Alpha's human daughter.
This could be trouble for me, she said. But I have talked to Z, and what I have to tell you has nothing to do with the Fae, and so I am at liberty to share it. I would not usually help the wolves, but I do not like those who take their battles to the innocents.
I waited.
I work at a bank, she said at last. I won't tell you the name of it, but it is the bank that the local Sea the Vampires uses. Their deposits follow a regular pattern,
meaning that most of their victims' payments were monthly. She sipped her drink.
6 days ago, there was an unexpected deposit.
Visitors paying tribute, I said, sitting up straighter in my chair. This sounded promising. A single fae or wolf or whatever wouldn't have paid a tribute high enough to catch anyone's eye.
I took the liberty of speaking to Uncle Mike himself before you came, said Z quietly. He's heard of no new visitors, which means these people are keeping very quiet.
We need to talk to the vampires, said Samuel. Adam will know how to do it.
That will take too long. I took out my cell phone and dialed Stefan's number. It was early for him to be up, but he'd called me not much later than this.
Mercy, he said warmly. Are you back from your trip?
Yes, Stefan. I need your help.
What can I do for you?
Something changed in his voice, but I couldn't worry about that. Tuesday night or early Wednesday morning, a group of people, including out-of-territory werewolves, kidnapped the Alpha's daughter. She's a personal friend of mine, Stefan. Someone told me that your Seed might know of a visiting pack.
Ah, he said. That's not in my area of responsibility. Do you want me to inquire for you?
I hesitated. I didn't know much about the vampires, except that smart people avoid them. Something about the formality of his question made me think it was a bigger question than it sounded.
What does that mean exactly? I asked suspiciously.
He laughed, a cheerful, un-vampire-like sound.
Good for you. It means that you are appointing me your representative, and that gives me certain rights to pursue this that I might not otherwise have.
Rights over me?
None that I will take advantage of, he said. I give you my word of honor, Mercedes Thompson. I will force you to do nothing against your will.
All right, I said. Then yes, I would like you to inquire for me.
What do you know?
I glanced at the woman's expressionless face. I can't tell you everything, just that I've been told that your Seed knows of visitors to the Tri-Cities who might be the group I'm looking for. If that group doesn't have any werewolves, then they're the wrong ones. They might be doing something experimental with medicines or drugs.
I'll inquire, he said. Keep your cell phone at hand. I'm not certain that was wise, said Z after I hung up.
You said she deals with the werewolves,
the woman curled her upper lip at me.
You didn't tell me she also deals with the undead.
I'm a mechanic, I told her. I don't make enough money to pay off the vampires in cash, so I fix their cars. Stefan has an old bus he's restoring. He's the only one I've ever dealt with personally. She didn't look happy, but her lip uncurled. I appreciate your time, I said, narrowly skirting an outright thank you, which can get you in trouble. The wrong kind of fae will take your thanks as an admission that you feel obligated to them, which means that you must then do whatever they ask. Z had been very careful to break me of that habit. The Alpha will also be happy to recover his daughter.
It is always good for the Alpha to be happy, she said.
I couldn't tell if she was being honest or sarcastic. She stood up abruptly and smoothed down her skirts to give me time to move my chair so she could exit. She stopped by the bar and spoke to the bartender before she left.
She smells like you, Samuel said to Z. Is she a metalsmith too?
Gremlin, please, said Z. It may be a new name for an old thing, but at least it is not a bad translation. She is a troll, a relative but not a close one. Trolls like money and extortion. A lot of them go into banking.
He frowned at me.
You don't go into that nest of vampires alone, Mercy. Not even if Stefan is escorting you. He appears better than most, but I have been around a long time. You cannot trust a vampire. The more pleasant they appear, the more dangerous they are.
I don't plan on going anywhere, I told him. Samuel is right. The wolves don't pay tribute here. Likely they are people who have nothing to do with taking Jesse. My phone rang.
Mercy?
It was Stefan. But there was something about his voice that troubled me. I heard something else, too, but there were more people in the bar, and someone had turned up the music. Wait a moment, I said loudly, then lied. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. I'm going outside. I waved at Samuel and Z, then walked outside to the quieter parking lot. Samuel came with me. He started to speak, but I held up a finger to my lips. I didn't know how good a vampire's hearing was, but I didn't want to risk it.
Mercy, can you hear me now?
Stefan's voice was overly crisp and even. Yes, I said. I could also hear the woman's voice that said sweetly,
Ask her, Stefan.
He sucked in his breath, as if the unknown woman had done something that hurt.
Is there a strange werewolf with you at Uncle Mike's?
He asked. Yes, I said, looking around. I couldn't smell anything like Stefan nearby, and I was pretty certain I'd have noticed. The vampires must have a contact at Uncle Mike's, someone who could tell Samuel was a werewolf and who knew Adam's werewolves.
My mistress wonders that she was not informed of a visitor.
The wolves don't ask permission to travel here, not from your seed, I told him. Adam knows.
Adam has disappeared, leaving his pack leaderless.
They spoke together, his words so tight on the end of hers that he sounded like an echo. I was relatively certain she didn't know I could hear her, though Stefan did. He knew what I was, because I'd shown him. Apparently he hadn't seen fit to inform the rest of his seethe. Of course, someone as relatively powerless as I was of little interest to the vampires. The pack is hardly leaderless, I said.
The pack is weak, they said, and the wolves have set precedent. They paid for permission to come into our territory, because we are dominant to Adam's little pack.
Samuel's eyes narrowed, and his mouth tightened. The vampire's contributors were the people who'd killed Mac, the people who had Jesse. So the new visitors have werewolves among them, I said sharply. They are not Brand's wolves. They cannot be a pack. They are less than nothing, outlaws with no status. I killed two of them myself, and Adam killed another two, and you know I am no great power. Real wolves, wolves who were pack, would never have fallen to something as weak as I. That was the truth, and I hoped they both could hear it. There was a long pause. I could hear murmuring in the background, but I could not tell what they said.
Perhaps that is so, said Stefan at last, sounding tired. Bring your wolf and come to us. We'll determine if he needs a visitor's pass. If not, we see no reason not to tell you what we know of these outlaws who are so much less than pack.
I don't know where your seed is, I said.
I'll come and get you, said Stefan,
apparently speaking on his own. He hung up. I guess we're going to visit the vampires tonight, I said. Sometime during the conversation, Z had come out as well. I hadn't noticed when, but he was standing beside Samuel. Do you know vampires? Samuel shrugged.
A little. I ran into one a time or two.
I'll go with you,
the old mechanic said softly, and tossed back the last of the scotch in the shot glass he'd brought out with him.
Nothing I am will help you. Metal is not their bane. But I know something of vampires.
No, I said. I need you for something else. If I don't call you tomorrow morning, I want you to call this number. I pulled an old grocery receipt out of my purse and wrote Warren's home number on the back of it. This is Warren's, the wolf who's Adam's third. Tell him as much as you know. He took the number.
I don't like this.
But he shoved the note into his pocket in tacit agreement.
I wish you had more time to prepare. Do you have a symbol of your faith, Mercy? A cross, perhaps? It is not quite as effective as Mr. Stoker made it out to be, but it will help.
I'm wearing a cross, Samuel said. Bran makes us all wear them. We don't have vampires in our part of Montana, but there are other things crosses are good for.
Like some of the nastier fae. But Samuel wouldn't mention that in front of Z. It would be rude. Just as Z would never mention that the third and fourth bullets in the gun he carried were silver. I made them for him myself. Not that he couldn't do it better himself, but if he got tangled up with werewolves, I figured it would be because of me.
Mercy? Asked Samuel.
I don't like crosses. My distaste has nothing to do with the metaphysical, like it does for vampires. When I lived in Bran's pack, I wore crosses too. I have a whole spiel about how sick it is to carry around the instrument of Christ's torture as a symbol for the Prince of Peace who taught us to love one another. It's a good spiel, and I even believe it. Really, though, they just give me the willies. I have a very vivid memory of going to church with my mother on one of her rare visits when I was 4 or 5. She was poor and living in Portland. She just couldn't afford to come very often. So when she could come, she liked to do something special. We went to Missoula for a mother-daughter weekend, and on Sunday picked a church to attend at random. More, I think, because my mother felt she ought to take me to church than because she was particularly religious. She stopped to talk to the pastor or priest, and I wandered farther into the building, so I was alone when I turned the corner and saw, hanging on the wall, a bigger-than-life statue of Christ dying on the cross. My eyes were just level with his feet, which were tacked to the cross with a huge nail. It wouldn't have been so bad, but someone with talent had painted it true to life, complete with blood. We didn't go to church that day. And ever since then, I couldn't look at a cross without seeing the Son of God dying upon it. So, no crosses for me. But having been raised in Bran's pack, I carried around something else. Reluctantly, I pulled out my necklace and showed it to them. Samuel frowned. The little figure was stylized. I suppose he couldn't tell what it was at first.
A dog? Asked Z, staring at my necklace.
A lamb, I said defensively, tucking it safely back under my shirt. Because one of Christ's names is the Lamb of God. Samuel's shoulders shook slightly.
I can see it now. Mercy holding a room full of vampires at bay with her glowing silver sheep.
I gave his shoulder a hard push, aware of the heat climbing up my cheeks, but it didn't help. He sang in a soft, taunting voice.
Mercy had a little lamb. I've been told it's the faith of the wearer that matters, Z said, though he sounded doubtful too. I don't suppose you've ever used your lamb against the vampire.
No, I said shortly, still huffy over the song. But if the Star of David works and Bran says it does, then this should too. We all turned to watch a car drive into the parking lot, but its occupants got out and, after the driver tipped an imaginary hat at Z, walked into Uncle Mike's. No vampires in that lot. Is there anything else we should know? I asked Z, who seemed to be the most informed of us. All I knew for certain about vampires came under the heading of stay away from.
Prayer doesn't work, he said, though it seems to have some effect on demons and some of the oldest of the dark fae. Garlic doesn't work. Except like insect repellent, said Stefan, just appearing between two parked cars behind Z. It doesn't hurt, but it smells bad and tastes worse. If you don't irritate one of us and make sure you bring a friend who hasn't eaten garlic, it'll at least put you last on the menu.
I hadn't heard him come, hadn't seen him or sensed him at all until he spoke. From somewhere, Z drew a dark-bladed dagger as long as my arm and stepped between me and the vampire. Samuel growled.
I'm sorry, Stefan apologized humbly, as he noticed how badly he'd startled us. Moving unseen is a talent of mine, but I usually don't use it on my friends. I've just had an unpleasant episode, and it left me with my guard up.
Stefan was tallish, but he always seemed to take up less space than he should, so I seldom thought of him as being a big man unless he was standing next to someone else. He was, I noticed, just exactly the same height as Samuel and nearly as broad in the shoulders, though he lacked some of the werewolf's bulk. His face had regular features, and in repose, he might be handsome, I suppose. But his expressions were so big that I lost the shape of his features for the bright engagement of his grin. Just then, though, he frowned at me.
"If I am to take you before the mistress, I'd rather you had dressed up a bit more."
I looked down and realized I was wearing the clothing I'd had on when I'd gone over to check out Adam's house. It seemed like a week ago rather than the night before last. The T-shirt was one Stefan himself had given me for teaching him how to correct the timing on his bus. It read, "Happiness is German engineering, Italian cooking, and Belgian chocolate," and bore a large stain from the cocoa I'd spilled on it. Thinking about how long I'd been wearing it made me realize that it smelled a little bit stronger than it usually did, and not a detergent and fabric softener either. "We just came back into town late this afternoon," I apologized. "I haven't had a chance to go home and change yet. But you're not much better." He looked down at himself, rocking back on his heels and spreading his hands like a vaudeville comic, exaggerating his motions for an audience. He was wearing a casual black long-sleeve shirt, unbuttoned over a plain white T-shirt, and jeans with a hole over one knee. I've never seen him wearing anything more formal, but for some reason his casual clothes always looked wrong somehow, as if he were wearing a costume.
"What, this?" he asked. "This is my best down-at-the-heels vampire look," he said. "Maybe I should have worn black jeans and a black shirt, but I hate overdoing it."
"I thought you were picking us up." I looked around pointedly. "Where's your car?"